The following programming is sponsored by the Pennsylvania Pro-Life Federation. The views expressed do not necessarily reflect the views of this station, its management, or Beasley Media Group.
Here's the truth. Abortion hurts. She didn't anticipate the situation, but now she must make a difficult choice. She can choose abortion, which might feel like a solution in the short term, but it leads to an aching sense of loss, depression, and a risk of infertility. Because abortion hurts women. But she also has another choice. She can choose to be a mother. Being a mother doesn't hurt. In fact, it can heal. And being a mother is more beautiful than anything you can imagine. Of course, it's not an easy road, but there are people who will walk with you, help you with childcare, healthcare, education, job training, even housing. You don't need abortion to succeed. You need support. We will connect you with the support you need. Go to standingwithyou.org. We will support you.
Hello and welcome. You're listening to Positively Pro-Life, a podcast brought to you by the Pennsylvania Pro-Life Federation. On Positively Pro-Life, we aim to bring you inspirational stories and conversation, important legislative updates, and informative interviews as we seek to restore and strengthen a culture of life. I'm your host, Ramil Tenney, Education Director at the Federation, and joining me as co-host is our Executive Director, Maria Gallagher. Welcome, Maria.
It is so great to be with you today, Ramil.
And I'm so happy that we were able to pick this up again after a brief break during the holiday season. I sure missed hosting, and I'm sure our listeners missed hearing our wonderful guests as well. But here we are, and I'm excited for today's conversation. Now, we start every year by setting apart January as Sanctity of Human Life Month, where we honor human life, not for its ability to sustain on its own or its contributions to society, but because of the inherent dignity that human life possesses for simply being. And so we focus on how we can protect every human life on this planet and help them thrive even under difficult circumstances. As we often hear on this podcast, the greatest threat that innocent preborn human lives face is that of abortion for any reason. And the reasons are primarily socioeconomic in many of the cases. Our guest today has made it her mission to raise awareness about adoption, a loving option that gives a woman a way out of some of the stressful factors leading her to consider an abortion while doing the most loving thing a mother can do for her child, protect their precious life. And today's conversation will be about the need for good adoption education and laws that help more women choose this path easily. Before we go into that, Maria has a wonderful update about the miraculous survival of a premature baby.
Thank you so much, Ramil. The following is from Right to Life, UK. Parents from Salisbury were in absolute shock as their baby girl was born 9 weeks early on Christmas Day, weighing just 2.12 pounds. Charlotte Jewell and Dennis King were expecting their baby Peyton to be born in late February, but Charlotte was admitted to hospital on the 20th of December as there were concerns that her daughter was not growing properly. Charlotte was diagnosed with preeclampsia, and she was told on Christmas Eve at a growth scan that she would need an emergency cesarean section. Peyton was born at 11:04 on Christmas morning. Her father, Dennis, reported that she had to be transferred to Princess Anne Hospital in Southampton for a short blip, but she returned to Salisbury Hospital afterwards, where she was doing great. "It was a complete shock. We weren't ready," he said. "We were going to go out and get everything this month, but it's a little bit late for that now." With a birth weight of just 2.12 pounds, reports say that Peyton was the smallest baby born that Christmas Day in Salisbury. And Ramil, I want to note that I have breaking news today, And that is the release of the 2023 abortion statistics from the Pennsylvania Department of Health. And sadly, in 2023, there were 35,412 abortions performed in Pennsylvania. And interestingly enough, there were 524 reports of complications from abortions that were submitted by physicians, 11.7% more than the number reported in 2022. So this is very alarming news, and we are going to follow this story throughout the year. And I encourage people to go to our website at paprolife.org, where they can see the previous year's report and to find out more about abortion in Pennsylvania. Remmel.
That really comes as a very, very sad news, because that is, the abortion number has gone up about 1,000 more in 2023 than 2022. And I know we are battling some vicious bills this year that would cause the number to go higher. So everyone out there, this battle is still waging all around us, and we really, really need to be doing, all of us need to be jumping in and doing our bit to ensure that more lives are protected. And that's and it's a beautiful thing that we are in a new year where we can do this and possibly reverse the effect of abortions and the rate of abortions in Pennsylvania. So there's always hope. Let's try and make it more pro-life, make our state more pro-life. And today we have Terry Marcroft as our guest. She's an adoptive mom, entrepreneur, nonprofit leader, and author. Terry's 25-year-old daughter is the love of her life, and her daughter's biological mother is Terry's all-time favorite action hero, who made an adoption plan while she was a senior in high school. Terry founded Unplanned Good in 2010 to spread the word about open adoption as an option for women facing unplanned pregnancies. Terry serves on the board of Second Mothers, a nonprofit that provides community, encouragement, and resources to second mothers, those who foster, adopt, or otherwise choose the beautiful mom title as they care for and parent children all over the world. Terry is also on the board of Real Options, Obria Women's Medical Clinics, and she holds a BS bachelor's degree in marketing from Santa Clara University and a master's in international management from the Thunderbird School of Global Management. Welcome back, Terry, to Positively Pro-Life.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm thrilled to join you today.
We were so honored to have you on a previous episode last year, the beginning of last year, along the same theme, but we talked about adoption in general, open adoption, the challenges, the beauty that and the gift that adoption is, both to the biological mother and the adoptive family. And but we didn't get to explore your story. So today, I just want to ask you, how did working for better adoption processes become your calling?
Well, the legislative part, working for better adoption processes, is really new, because that my whole life changed in 22 when Roe v. Wade got overturned and abortion got sent back to the states. And my daughter graduated college and she became independent. So my mom role, as I knew it for the last couple decades, was pretty much completed or done in terms of the day-to-day support. So suddenly I had a whole lot more free time, and Roe got overturned. And so the whole idea of unplanned pregnancy got put back on the radar of our society. And people were talking about it again, talking about pregnancy and talking about abortion and talking about options like never before. It all just resurged in volume in 2022. And so I felt called to write down in one place everything that I knew about adoption as an option, and capture some of the stories of the beautiful birth mothers who look back on their experiences. And I talked to so many people who chose adoption, and they wanted to share their stories. And I thought, I need to capture all of this in one place. So I wrote a book in 22 called Pro-Choice, Pro-Adoption. And it's meant for an audience of people who believe that abortion, as your commercial just said, that abortion is a solution for them. And so what I try to do in the book is point out that it's real short-term thinking that leads you to believe that abortion is a solution. And if you look at the bigger picture of a woman's overall health, overall well-being, big picture goals in her life that don't have to change because she is pregnant, you know, there are a lot of considerations that I wanted to capture in that book and reflect the stories of birth mothers. So I did that in 22, and that led to meeting some people in politics, and specifically our organization targeted a couple of states that had the strict bans in place, the trigger laws. And so then I met some people in the Idaho state capitol, and we just started talking about what could be done to make adoption easier. If you're going to make abortion harder, cool, but how about making adoption easier also? So that conversation seemed to resonate in the Idaho capitol. And so we went from there and started working on legislation.
So Terry, can you tell us a little bit about the adoption education bills that you are working to pass in several states?
Sure. So in 2024, which was just not even a year ago, we got three bills through the Idaho legislature. And so one of them was education related. And so the bill that was passed in Idaho last year and signed by the governor in March is a bill about adoption education. And what it says is that any Idaho school that has a health ed class or a sex ed class where they're talking about contraception or STDs, so you know sort of the general topic, if they're talking about contraception or STDs, they will now also educate about adoption. So that has three components. They need to explain about modern adoption practices, which in a nutshell is open adoption. Second, they need to explain local adoption resources to the students. And third, they need to explain the Safe Haven Act and how that allows women to place their baby in a safe place when they don't want a parent, as opposed to abandoning their baby somewhere. So those three aspects need to be included now in adoption education in every health ed or sex ed class. And furthermore, for the Idaho colleges and universities that have medical centers that are treating students and dispensing contraceptions or testing for STDs, they must also hand out adoption information. So the big picture idea is that women will no longer graduate from college not realizing that adoption is an option. Because truly, many women choose between abortion and single parenting, not even thinking about the other option.
And that is kind of filling in the gaps. Like you said, most women are aware of just two options, and then you present this as a very viable option when in a crisis pregnancy. And I'm wondering if where did the thought process behind this bill begin? Like, what about educating on the adoption process? Like, what was it missing? What exactly was the thought process behind introducing a bill that would allow this to happen?
Well, the first part was I saw the need for education because I've talked with so many women that have said to me, you know, I really wish that I knew about adoption X number of years ago because I had an abortion and I've regretted it ever since. And I wish that someone had told me about adoption. And that kind of a comment just sort of breaks my heart because the regret that's in the voices of these women who wish that they had heard about adoption or wish that they knew how it works these days, you know, it really pointed to a need for education. And so when I started this legislative work, I just coincidentally made an appointment with Idaho's superintendent of public instruction and sat down with her. Her name is Debbie Critchfield. Sat down with her and she said, yes, I agree wholeheartedly. She was enthusiastic about that. And she said, can you find us a curriculum that goes through a good training on that? Because we could put that into our health ed classes. And so my board and I reviewed about 10 different curricula that summer, and we didn't find any health ed classes that did a good job of talking about adoption, and which isn't surprising because adoption has changed so much in the last 20 years. So from there, we just said, well, it looks like it needs to be a legislative solution then if there's no curricula that sort of fits the mold or fits the bill. So we made it into a bill. Superintendent Critchfield was very supportive of that too. And so with her support, it did get passed in the Capitol. And then talking about it the following summer, now we've got this now in January of 2025, we have three other states that are introducing our education bill into their legislatures. Because it's not all about Idaho law, it's about American lives. And so getting it into other states' legislators and being introduced this month in New Hampshire, Oregon, and California is super exciting. It's Idaho leading the way, though. The reception has been so strong in Idaho, and people just completely embrace these kinds of family values. It's very much of a pro-life state. And so the reception to all of these ideas was just overwhelmingly strong. Like, oh my goodness, I wonder if I can keep up with these people. So we dug in and we did a bunch of bills last year, and it's been going full steam ahead since then.
Harry, can you explain a little bit more about open adoption and why a birth mother might consider that as an option?
Yes. So so in the first place, adoption starts with a woman who had not planned to get pregnant, isn't thrilled about being pregnant, and is also pretty convinced that she's not ready to parent. So if we separate being pregnant from some kind of a 20-year project of parenting, if we look at those as two different decisions, she could actually decide to continue the pregnancy and complete the pregnancy and not sign up for 20 years of parenting, because instead we want her to know that she can choose parents. And so the openness that comes in adoption these days after, you know, the huge changes that have changed the standards completely in this country, we now promote open adoption. It accounts for over 90% of the infant adoptions in this country. And it means basically that there's some kind of exchange of information between the woman who gives birth and the adoptive parents. So they may exchange just contact information. They may decide to exchange photos that the adoptive parents could send the birth mother photos once or twice a year, or they might open up their social media accounts to each other. There's all kinds of degrees of openness. But basically, it means that the contact information is there and the possibility for future relationship is there. And then, like any relationship in your life, you make it what you want it to be. Because you don't go out to dinner with people unless you want to go out to dinner with them. Or you don't, you know, write a letter to someone unless you want to write a letter to someone. There's no pressure. There's no requirement. But if you want to have each other in your life, that's possible now with open adoption. And a birth mother would choose that because it's so gratifying for her to see that her child is doing well. Her child is in a home with a mom and a dad. Her child is thriving, being provided for, being loved on a daily basis. You know, whether that child is playing soccer or learning the piano, all of these bits of information are extremely welcome by the birth mother because she gets to see the family that she has created with her decision to choose life. And these women who have placed their baby and chosen adoptive parents, often my experience is that they look back on that and they are so proud of themselves. Imagine if you had just, you know, climbed Half Dome or climbed Mount Everest, and you did this thing that was really hard in the moment. But afterwards, the sense of, satisfaction and pride and, you know, relief and joy, all of those emotions, they're so proud of themselves. And they don't, I've never heard of one who regrets placing, you know, when she did it voluntarily, it was her idea and her decision.
Yes. And one of the questions that we hear often, especially when we talk about abortion and having like alternatives to it, which is adoption or parenting. But every time we bring up adoption, there are people who have a question of why is the process of adoption so difficult? And I was just wondering, I know we have adoption laws in place in every state. And I was just wondering, from your perspective, what is the marker of a good adoption law?
A good adoption law.
Yes.
We have a lot of great adoption laws in place, but I think, as we know, it changes from state to state. So every state is in charge of their own adoption laws, and they do vary quite a bit from state to state. And so the laws that we're putting in place in Idaho, of course, I think they're really good because I'm working on authoring them and championing them through the Capitol. So we're choosing the battles that we think are going to be best benefiting the birth mother. And I think that's really important because the birth mother doesn't have a champion already. You know, you've got a lot of people fighting for adoptive parents, tax mm-hmm. credits and laws and reform and all kinds of things. And then you have a lot of adoptee groups too, but championing for the birth mother, for example, one of the ones that we have coming up this session, which just started, is one law that would say, let's ensure that the birth mother knows she's entitled to her own lawyer, so she doesn't have to use the adoptive parent's lawyer, and that she's entitled to individual counseling and therapy to help her either confirm her decision pre-placement or help her heal from that loss post-placement. Because it's, like I say, it's not an easy process to go through. And anybody, you know, anybody that's not made of steel would require some kind of, you know, talk it out a little bit and process it and be able to heal from the adoption experience. So I think that is a good law. Other really good laws have to do with safe haven option and letting people know that safe haven is an anonymous form of surrender that avoids any kind of prosecution as long as your baby is healthy and unharmed and you place it in a safe haven approved place. You know, that's a good thing, a good law and a good thing for people to know about. And so there are a whole lot of other good laws that are out there in the books, but yes, it's difficult. It's difficult to adopt these days. Part of that is the numbers side of it too.
Do you think we also have to work, in addition to adoption laws, do we also have to work on our culture and maybe introducing more of these adoption stories into our media, into entertainment, into the arts, things like that?
Everywhere.
Yeah.
Everywhere. Yeah. I'm so glad you raised that point because so many people think that it has nothing to do with them, you know, but it's not about how many adoptees you know, it's about how many women you know who are facing unplanned pregnancy. Because if that's 1 in 4 teenagers who get pregnant by the time they reach 20 years old, that's a lot of the youth. That's a lot of the next generation. And that means that all of us know someone either in our family, it could be a niece or a nephew, it could be in your neighborhood, in your community, in your school, in your church, in your club. There are women facing unplanned pregnancy everywhere. And if we've processed the information in our own minds to know that we want to advocate for the healthier solution, you know, we could, granted, there's no perfect solution if you're facing an unplanned pregnancy, because mm-hmm. we would, yeah. So, but if we want to advocate for the healthier solution, all of us could be ready to advocate for adoption. And the attractive things about it are the openness that's more of a recent development. So 30 years ago, it was a whole different conversation. But now, you know, knowing, letting women know that they can choose adoption, they can choose the parents, they could choose a stay-at-home mom or a career mom, they could choose, you know, a Catholic couple or a Jewish couple or an evangelical couple. They can choose all the aspects of it. They can choose an open adoption or a closed adoption. All of this is up to the woman who might choose adoption. And so putting them in the driver's seat is also very empowering.
That is beautiful. We only have a few minutes left, and I was wondering, can you tell us where can we find more about your book and your story? How can people get in touch with you if they're interested in maybe improving laws in their own states?
Yes.
And they need some kind of direction if they want to reach out to you. How can they do that?
If they have any kind of a desire to get involved in legislation, you can look on our website and see the bills that we got passed in 24 and the ones that we're suggesting in 2025. And our website is unplannedgood.org. unplannedgood.org. And so they can look at the laws there and they can suggest them to their representatives. And sometimes just knowing that constituents are passionate about this and knowing that these laws have already passed in Idaho, so there's model legislation for them, that can make the road easier for the legislator who decides to carry that bill in their own Congress. And so everyone can reach out to their own governmental reps and make that suggestion if you want to improve adoption law in your own state.
That's wonderful. Well, I want to thank you, Terry Marcroft, an adoptive mom, entrepreneur, nonprofit leader, and author, for being on Positively Pro-Life today.
Thank you so much for having me. Yeah, and I forgot to answer Rimmel's question that the books are available on Amazon, both of them. There's Pro-Choice, Pro-Adoption, and then the second one is called Pro-Family, Pro-Adoption. And the big difference between the two is the reader, whether it's whether you're talking to a pro-choice advocate or whether you're talking to a pro-life advocate. They're two different messages as they're communicating.
Thank you so much, Terry. We greatly appreciate your being on the program.
Thank you for having me. It was a great time. So much. Thank you.
Positively Pro-Life is made possible through the generous support of the members of the Pennsylvania Pro-Life Federation all across the Commonwealth. The Pennsylvania Pro-Life Federation is the largest single-issue pro-life organization in the Keystone State. Thank you for joining us today. And remember, there's always a reason to choose life.